This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, joining you from a very remote location that I cannot disclose at this time, joined by Mr. Adam Murray. We had to go through quite the fight just to make this happen right now.
Yeah, but I'm kind of used to it at this point.
You want to know the remote location that I'm at?
No, you're just an undisclosed location. I assume it's your usual NCAA bunker, which you're gearing up for, where nobody hears from you for 3 weeks. Because you have all your brackets on the wall, and everything's all tape and all.
I don't have it on the wall. I have them in a notebook, a very, very detailed notebook, but I don't have them on the wall, though. So I can't go that far with it.
Fair enough, but... Now, this week, let's talk some trade deadline action, shall we?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So we're going to be talking about here, I mean, obviously, we get past the All-Star break. There's a lot of funny business that happened with the trade deadline. But now we're kind of getting to the nuts and bolts of it with the trade deadline that just passed up after the All-Star game. First of all, any notes that you came from the All-Star game, the one won by Anthony Davis as the league MVP or the All-Star game MVP? My brain is all scrambled right now.
I'm just sort of glad that everybody else is getting sick of the no defense, who cares, why are we here anyways attitude. You know, it's just almost a waste of time now. Everybody's just shooting threes and, oh, we got to get 200 points, and it is not a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it seemed like they claimed they weren't trying. But it seemed like a proactive, like, let's get to 200 points type of deal. Like, somebody wanted to get to it. But, you know, now they're trying to, like, here's the thing. The All-Star game, the All-Star weekend for the NBA, their greatest trait versus Major League Baseball and the Pro Bowl and the NHL is that it's the funnest. Like, it's the most enjoyable. It's the one where you can sort of turn your brain off and sort of, like, gawk at all the stars and all the great moves that they do. But, you know, I guess there is a point where it's like, okay, I want to see some competitiveness. I want to see people who care. And, you know, we used to see that in the All-Star. Even, like, I mean, Bill Simmons was saying that it stopped in the early 90s. I would disagree. I would say even into, like, the mid-2000s, the All-Star game was fairly competitive.
Yeah, but it was slowly on the decline. Like, the full competitiveness sort of died in the mid-90s. But it's, oh, yeah, we're trying, but I don't need to see everybody shooting threes and... everybody sets everybody else for alley-oops and dunks here and dunks there. It's just, I don't know. It wears thin after a while.
Okay, speaking of wearing thin, my intro is finally over, so we can get to the nuts and bolts of this episode, which I guess we'll call it boom and then bust, because it felt like for the trade deadline, the biggest deals were the ones that really didn't happen on trade deadline day, which was this past Thursday. Is there one that you really want to get started on? I know we kind of looked at it chronologically with, you know, Kyle Korver going to the Cavs and Atlanta taking on Mike Dunleavy's contract and things like that, where Dunleavy kind of helped them out. So I would almost consider that a wash, you know, between Korver and Atlanta, because Korver was an expiring deal anyway, and Atlanta found a decent role player to replace him, you know?
Well, that was back when Atlanta didn't know what they were doing. Were they buying or selling? And then... They were supposed to buy out Dunleavy, but now they kept him, and he's playing, and it was, you know, Korver just provides what he provides. He provides shooting, but no defense or nothing else, and, you know, they're now, you know, then LeBron started bitching about how the team doesn't rebound and play defense. Like, well, that's what happens when you trade somebody for somebody who doesn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, and also, Korver kind of got a little bit of some kind of a leg injury in that Bulls game that was on Saturday night. LeBron sat down because he said he had strep throat. I'm starting to get the real sense, Adam, that LeBron just doesn't want to play against Wade because he just respects him too much. I really, really believe that. Like, when it comes to the regular season and it's games that he can give up, I think LeBron is just willing to tank games when he plays against Wade because that's how much he respects him. That's a conspiracy theorist in me.
There's no... It's just...
It just seems like every time LeBron plays Wade... It's like Wade always eats his lunch, and LeBron's kind of got that wink, wink, nudge, nudge, okay, you got me kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, but meh.
But no, Korver may have suffered an injury. Hopefully it's not nothing too bad. We'll obviously find out as the week goes along here. But, you know, the other ones, one was a small potatoes deal, one of which, one piece already got moved after the fact, which was Miles Plumlee for Roy Hibbert and Spencer Hawes. Roy Hibbert wound up, even though he's got a knee injury, it's like, I mean, is there even a chance he's going to play again now that he's been traded again to the Denver Nuggets?
It's just amazing how far he's fallen and just the super decline of him.
Yeah. Okay. And now we've talked before about Plumlee being moved in along with a second round pick in exchange for Jozef Nurkić and a first round pick. People thought that Denver was nuts for giving up that first round pick, even though it was top five protected. Plumlee is already having some injury snags when he gets there. He's going into the last year of his deal. He's going to be restricted free agent. Would you call that like a quote-unquote big deal? I mean, it does involve two teams that are trying to make the playoffs, so I guess you can call that a big deal.
Well, the funny thing is, you forgot to mention it was the other Plumlee of Mason as opposed to Miles, since apparently all Plumlees try to be traded this offseason. I think we touched on this already, and Portland was god-awful in rebounding. They needed a center who can actually be a center, and Denver just didn't need him and would gladly take anything from him. What do they need another first-round pick for? They already have enough young players, and just adding another lottery pick isn't going to help them.
Well, not only that, you got to commit the money if you want to keep Plumlee now. I did not look at it, to be honest with you, Adam. I don't know the contract situation for Nikola Jokic. But that's another situation where you really got to start thinking, all right, we got to start putting some retainer on the side of our cap space, because I know they're trying to hit the salary floor this year, so they obviously have the money to spend. They were the one of the teams that overpaid to try to get Dwayne Wade to go over there. But there is a point where it's like, okay, you got Gary Harris, you got Nikola Jokic, you got Emmanuel Mudiay, Murray. You need to start kind of saving up some of those 20 mil slots, maybe potential max slots for a guy like Jokic. And I would have to assume that his contract will be coming up in the next, I want to say, 2 years?
Should be 1 year. Second-round picks are usually three-year deals, so...
It's one of those Draymond Green situations where you got to kind of, show the money now, like, rather than show it...
Oh, yeah, they're getting it. They're getting it already because, I think Chandler is... Gallinari,
who they're probably going to lose. But that's what I'm saying. This Plumlee's potential offer sheet and you trying to match it so that you could save face on not giving up a first-round pick for nothing... Does that sort of throw a monkey wrench into it, or do they have enough cap space to reasonably keep Plumlee and Jokic?
They have enough cap space. Plumlee's not going to break down the market for just a backup big. I don't see him getting 15 or 16 million. I don't see him getting Biombo money. So
yeah, well, the thing is too that one of the influences at the trade deadline was. The big market kind of went the inverse because those bigs got so badly overpaid over the last two seasons, Omer Sheik and Timothy Mozgov, and you mentioned Biombo, and some of those players might be justified in getting the deals that they got, but the problem is that if you take those guys on in trades, I mean, you're eating a huge cap hit. So a lot of these trades involving big men like Tyson Chandler, they didn't happen. And a lot of GMs were like, look, we're not going to take on this kind of money just to have a big man.
Yeah, that's, as we always mention, the NBA is changing, and you don't be stuck in this, all these 4 or 5 year deals and all of a sudden, for an obsolete player. So if Denver's strategy was we probably would target him at free agency, so why not just get him now and get him into the system, and we'll just match any reasonable deal.
Well, what would you consider a reasonable deal to match?
10, 12 million.
I was thinking somewhere around 15 to 16.
I don't think he's going to get that much money on the market because he is just, he is a one-dimensional. He's just a stretch five.
Yeah, well, he's also got some good assist numbers. Like he's got decent court vision for a center. His defense is terrible. I mean, let's be honest. But the thing with the Nuggets is outside of Jokic, who isn't a good defensive player there?
Yeah, exactly. And how in demand will his skill set be? And like, I don't I don't see teams busting down the door to line up, and we need to get him. So
and then age for Plumlee is not on his side. I think he came in the league at 23 years old, 22 years old. So he's going to be in his late 20s by the time he gets to this second contract. Never a good sign. That's what kind of worked in Biombo's favor. He was so young when he came into the league that when he got to his second contract, it was like, I want to say he's only about 23 years old, you know?
He is young, but he's just, you know, he was another one-dimensional guy, and one-dimensional guys I don't think are going to get, you know, they're not going to see these huge contracts that everybody else is getting.
Speaking of big men, we kind of touched on in the previous episode about the Serge Ibaka deal where Toronto got him in exchange for Terrence Ross, you know, a 2017 first-round pick, which was the lesser of the two picks that they had gotten from the Clippers. So it's going to be – it is absolutely going to be a late first-round pick, probably not even going to get out of, like, the mid-20s or, like, the high 20s possibly.
Yeah, it'll be a high first-rounder. And, you know, everybody's trying to save face. Like, oh, that was a good deal for Orlando, and Orlando won the trade, you know, free agency, but – yeah, Terrence Ross does have a super good contract of 2 years, $20 million remaining, but he's not a centerpiece player, and for a team that doesn't have a centerpiece, because, you know, we could say Aaron Gordon is, but he, as a player, he is still not that good.
Yeah, we've already kind of gone through the idea of, like, melding that with the previous trade with Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, who was that draft pick being traded for Ibaka. So the idea that you gave up, like, you only got like 30 cents on the dollar and you only got 40 cents on the dollar. How many cents on the dollar you want to kind of like, you know, add, you know, kind of like mark that value for that player when you exchange them. But, you know, for Ibaka, is it fair to say for Hennigan, the GM of the Magic, that it felt sort of like a give up move, that you knew that Ibaka wasn't going to re-sign, that you weren't really going to be going anywhere with him for the remainder of that season? So you just got some kind of value out of it before you let him leave for nothing.
Well, you can either have the delusion of, oh, we could still try to convince him with 25 games, even though, you know, the general manager has sort of not given you good tones. The coach says, I can't figure out how to play anybody on my team. And, you know, you could go the Pelicans route of, you know, Ryan Anderson of, no, we could keep him. It's great. And then just get absolutely nothing for him, or take really what you can. And the market just, you know, I guess if, you know, Terrence Ross at six man, and a late first-round pick. If that's the best you could get, all right. You know, you don't go in, you know, making the trade thinking, all right, how can I make this trade worse? How can I get whatever I can? But at the same time, it just, you know, it says, what is Orlando doing?
Yeah, well, the other thing, a part of it is, like, for Hennigan, and you know, I guess in a way for Frank Vogel, even though I don't know how much input he had in the trade itself, is that, like, are you filling a need if you're in Orlando? And the truth is not really. I mean, Evan Fournier kind of plays a very similar position to Terrence Ross. It's also a give-up move on Mario Azonia. You're basically saying we're done with Azonia, which a lot of people already knew already, but now you've really sounded the alarm for that. Ross is going to be starting from now on.
I wouldn't say it is gives up the Azonia train. It's just, you know, it's just, well, what are you doing? How are you? You have no strategy, no anything. And, you know, granted, the past, you know, two games that he's been playing now, he's actually gotten, I think, more minutes now than he has in a long time.
Well, but that's sort of the effect that the next team that we're going to be talking about, Sacramento, has with theirs. Like, it's like a looter and a riot. Like, somebody's got to get those minutes, you know?
Yep.
And so for this next one, this is the big one. And, you know, we talked ad nauseum about it with Todd Weber, unfortunately. Technical difficulties once again sort of barred our way from being able to bring that out to the ever growing public that listens to our podcast. What's our listener count, you think, now?
What do you think?
Three? Does your mom listen to the show?
Yeah, I figure it has to be one person.
Yeah, it's I mean, for all the person and are loyal and do pay attention from the, you know, either the Place to Be crop or the people that just kind of catch us, like, from the Twitterverse or whatever. Thank you for listening. Thank you for continuing to listen. But we had planned an episode in between them this week, right before the trade deadline, where we talked ad nauseum about Anthony Davis uniting with DeMarcus Cousins via a trade with the New Orleans Pelicans, basically going into, I mean, the easiest way to say is win now mode. And the Kings basically giving up on the Boogie era. We had Todd Weber on the show, who's from Sacramento. I mean, great Kings fan. Great insight. I wish I could be able to show that, but the audio got totally jumbled. But that's just another shitty deal for another day. But let's go ahead and just sort of speak on the Cousins trade. First of all, your reaction when you heard about it.
It was surprising there were no better deals to be offered than now that plenty of time has passed. You sort of think about it, and it's just like, well, it sort of just became, wow, that's crazy to kind of.
Well, you also had that all-star post-all-star euphoria, but you had the 3 days in between where there were no games being played. The trade deadline was still a few days away. And you're like, oh my God, this mega deal. Is there any fallout from this? Is there going to be some kind of other big deal after that? It turned out not to be the case. But with Cousins, this is obviously the blockbuster trade of the season. Is it possible it might be like the blockbuster trade of like for the next 2 or 3 years?
No, it'll only become a blockbuster trade if he does anything. Because now, you know, now the negative articles are coming around like, oh, he's not that good. He can't even win 40 games and blah, blah, blah.
He played on a losing team and he couldn't carry them and his PER is bad.
Yeah,
blah, blah,
blah. So it's like I said, it went from, wow, they got him for nothing to now, oh, Sacramento really needs to start over. And it's, you know.
How much of that is the Sacramento media sort of turning heel on Cousins?
It's just too much media and, you know, it's the old ESPN first take of everybody has to have the opinion now, and you know, it takes there's no time to really digest it because you have to have your opinion so quick. And yeah, it was a great deal for New Orleans because they really had nothing going for them, and they're just sort of spinning their wheels.
Exactly. Would you rather have like the Buddy Hields and the Langston Galloways and this whatever this draft pick is going to be, which is a unbelievably a protected pick in the top three? I don't even know how that was even possible. But, I mean, Divac, let's be fair. Vlade Divac, the GM of the Sacramento Kings, he could have gotten more out of this. He could have gotten another deal or another draft pick out of the deal. The rumor is that Cousins' agent was kind of muddying the whole thing because he didn't want the deal done in the first place. So he was telling teams, if you take my player, he will not sign an extension there, and there's no guarantee that he'll be signed with you. And he was trying to scare teams away because he wanted – Cousins to get the Supermax at 35% cap from the Kings. Then Vivek Renadeve, I hope I said that name right, the owner of the Kings. I guess he was having second thoughts as we went into the All-Star break about the value of Cousins. Is that fair? Or whether he wanted to really give him that Supermax contract in about a year?
Well, I was wondering, it's a lot of money to commit to somebody, and can you really plop down that much and... At that point, it's just, okay, the headaches become more than the production, and yeah, he could have gotten, you know, I don't know why he didn't just say, give me, like, you know, 3 second-round picks in it first, and was just, you know, a very simple one-on-one, make me your offer. Oh, well, the offer went down because this, you know, it was 2 picks, and it became one, and then, you know, I guess reports were Toronto offered Valanciunas in a first, and it's like, yeah, well, the offers aren't going to be there, just take what you can, and...
Do you believe, I mean, because we heard that rumor too, you know, on some of the podcasts, that do you believe that that was the best deal that was on the table for Boogie Cousins? Now, Divac claims that he had a better deal a couple of days ago, probably with New Orleans, with an added first-round pick, but it fell apart. You know, I just can't believe that that was the best deal. I mean, I think the Lakers probably would have given him more. I'm almost sure that the Celtics could have given him more if Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge had really signed off and said, yeah, Boogie is worth the risk, let's do it.
Well, I don't know why they wouldn't just give him Ingram. And Ingram, now he needs to really become a super all-star player because he could have, you know, Cousins could have transformed the L.A. to a destination place again, in theory.
That's the Drexler 84 effect of like, well, we don't need a guard. You know, so let's get the bid. You know, like that kind of idea.
Yeah, and at the same time, the Celtics, you know, obviously didn't want him. And I think this was just, you know, they waited way too long. They should have done it in the offseason, or they should have done it next offseason. Because what's the point of, you know, great, thankfully he has another year left on his deal for New Orleans, but we know nobody's going to come close to Golden State. Nobody's, you know, it's everybody's chasing Cleveland in the East. So the finals are basically very hard penciled in, not even just a soft. Well, we could raise, it seems to be this is where it's going. So why are you going to cut up your team just to, you know, go nowhere because you're going to, you have no chance of sneaking into a final?
Well, let me say this. Was there some kind of sneaky genius behind this deal for Sacramento in this way? Is that he's being traded to New Orleans. Now, New Orleans was already going into the All-Star break, 10 games under 500. Based on the tiers that have already shown up in terms of win-losses in the Western Conference, the probably the very best New Orleans was going to do was the 8th seed, where you would probably play the Golden State Warriors in the first round. The other thing is, New Orleans is not necessarily like, it's not like DeMarcus Cousins being traded to the Thunder or being traded to the Toronto Raptors, like Serge Ibaka did. It's not like you're helping out a really good team and putting them over the top as a great team. Like, New Orleans was one of those teams that definitely needed to make the move. Like you said, they were sort of in a mediocre situation for their future, along with Anthony Davis. You need to try to please Davis and make him feel like he can get to the next level if you make the deal with Boogie, even if you don't have the guarantee that he's going to re-sign in 2018. But they're still a mediocre team. And it's already shown in the first two games with Cousins. Like, he's played well, but you already see the signs of him being, you know, having issues with defensively with big guys who try to get under. I'll say this. After really watching him as a member of the Pelicans, a member of my team, I can understand sort of the anger with Cousins. He gets bullied a lot. He gets touched on a lot. I think it's just his reputation.
Yes, it is his reputation. And it's just one of those, well, if you're just going to sit and whine about it, well, then, you know, you're not
like,
going to get...
Like, the name of the Rockets is like super physical with him. Super physical.
Yeah, and that's what you know, the old send out a goon. Just send some, you know, Nene doesn't, he's not going to provide any depth or any, you know, future for that. So, okay, let's just have him go bang out Cousins and we'll just let everyone else shoot threes.
Yeah, but, I mean, AD is still getting his. The problem is, like, I think you and I had a kind of like a nice little funny exchange about it when we were talking with Todd, is that your third wheel in your big three, potentially, especially if you want to dole out the money, is Jrue Holiday. Like, is that something that's very reasonable? Now, he was god-awful against the Rockets. He looked like he was scared. Like, he had never played in a big game in his life. And then the next game, he played better. But you can't just go by two games since the trade and go, oh, this is a failure.
Well, you can't judge it on two games when you have a really somebody who has to be the centerpiece enter this new system of nothing, because don't forget, New Orleans had been running on an invisible four. There is, you know, they're running Dante Cunningham out there, and Solomon Hill are their, you know, three and four. They're invisible players who never get touched the ball or not. Nobody runs plays for them. So now all of a sudden you have to really change your game planning, and it's not going to happen in one game.
It's going to be a very long process. I mean, it's a long process, but the problem is you have to hurry that process because, let's be honest, you have a season and a half window. Is that agreeable?
You know, start next season. This season just sort of, you know, this is the exhibition for next season because you have no three-point shooting on your team, period, now.
Oh, they have their guard play is garbage, absolute garbage. I mean, it's not like Buddy Hield was this terrific player. He was a decent rookie. I know Vivek is, like, in love with him. That was one of the pieces behind why that deal got done in the first place. But losing Galloway hurt because that was their best shooter shooting percentage-wise.
Yeah, so now you're just relying on Ejuan Moore, and he's been out, so.
And then Tim Frazier, who got one triple-double basically by accident.
You forgot to mention the big trade of the corpse of Chris Anderson was traded to Charlotte for a 2017 second-round pick that is so protected it will never be conveyed.
I'm the only thing that surprised me is that that's not a trade exception that they were going to use. I thought they were going to try to use that in order to like get one more trade done. It turned out that they just used a little bit of that extra money so they could sign Darren Williams, who just got waived by the Mavericks.
Yep, and now we are getting to the excitement where everybody's getting traded and everybody's flipping out. And
well, let's. I want to get to the kind of the waiver slash rental market at the very end, because I think there might be some interesting candidates there that we can talk about. There was a couple of trades that involved the Lakers and the Houston Rockets. One was Corey Brewer going along with a 2017 first round pick that's unconditional, going to the Lakers in exchange for Lou Williams. People just for Houston, because Lou was like one of their leading scorers for the Lakers. He still has value. Corey Brewer, plus minus wise, is just a negative. Like, you can't. There's really no reason to even put him on the floor, even though the Lakers are tanking. So it's not like a huge shock. The other trade that was involved is that Tyler Ennis went to the Lakers in exchange for Marcelo Huertas. Huertas was immediately cut by the Rockets. The Rockets are probably looking to keep one more spot so they can sign another veteran for their playoff run, which they're bound to do because they're in the three spot in the Western Conference. I want to talk also, and you can maybe try to blend it all together along with the almost trade for Boogie Cousins, about the firing of Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. First of all, Mitch Kupchak's era in L.A. as the GM that sort of replaced Jerry West. Well, how would you consider it?
It was not good.
He got Paul Gasol.
And then that and now look where they are. They have absolutely nobody. They can't get any meeting with any free agent whatsoever. All you're reduced to is bidding against yourself for Timofey Mozgov, and then you give up Lou Williams for Corey Brewer, and then, well, you got Corey Brewer, you got Lual Deng, you got Larry Howard, Nance, the and Dwight you got Howard, Brandon Ingram, who are the same.
Howard, I'm sorry. The Dwight Howard trade blew up in their face.
Well, Dwight Howard just has a history of trades blowing up in his face.
But, I mean, we remember the Fantastic Four in 2004. That didn't work out so well. But, I mean, 2005, when Shaq departed, but they re-signed Kobe because they were too big. You couldn't fit both of them in the same town. Did that seem like a rebuild to you? Would you consider that a proper rebuild where Kupchak went from the bottom up and was able to turn them back into a championship team? Or was
no,
that more?
It doesn't. Also, it doesn't. You can't rest upon your laurels from 10 years ago if the last 5 years you've single-handedly just ran everybody, the wheels fell off of Kobe, and then Kupchak was just like, remember how I got Kobe and built around Kobe? And, well, that was so long ago, and then you had nothing.
The two-year $50 million contract is probably the worst contract in NBA history for Kobe Bryant.
So, it was just a strange timing of, you could have done this a month ago and nobody would have cared, unless he was so gung-ho on making this totally stupid trade on the deadline that was like, all right, now we need to do it. But it was just like, well, why are we? It's something that could have been done. It could have been done and nobody would have cared. Just strange timing.
Yeah, well, not only that, Magic Johnson, who was already slowly being brought back into the fold of the Lakers organization in terms of like being a manager or some type of, no one knew what the actual role was at the time when Jeannie Buss brought him in. He was saying in interviews that he was kind of like having powwows, trying to learn about the cap and how it works, which gave everybody the sense that Magic was trying to get Mitch's job, even though that wasn't the way it was worded when he was originally hired. Now the truth has come out. Buss is gone. Kupchak's gone. Magic Johnson's in. And they're also bringing in Rob Pelinka, who's like a longtime sports agent, to the Stars as a general manager. Now, this is not a shocking thing. We've seen it many, many times in Major League Baseball. I mean, the one that I know I can remember right off the top of my head is Dan Duquette, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to remember a couple of others. I don't think Boris – was Scott Boris ever a general manager in Major League Baseball?
I don't believe so.
But it has happened before. That's kind of where that trend came from, with sports agents becoming – general manager.
Well, I mean, you can have TV analysts be NFL GMs, so.
Yeah, it goes a lot of different ways, but I mean, there's not enough to really gauge on what Pelinka is able to do. But here's my question: the truth can always get twisted depending on who wants to feel like the smarter person in the room. But when it comes to the Cousins deal that didn't happen, do you think that was Kupchak or do you think that was Magic? Do you think Magic shot the deal down or that Magic was trying to get the deal done and Mitch Kupchak shot the deal down?
Well, if Mitch Kupchak was gone, then...
But that's the thing. He was announced as being gone right after the Boogie deal went down.
Yeah, because he wouldn't give up Ingram in the deal. And I think it was just he was gone already. It was just now we need to sort of announce it before something else goes down. And we can't, you know, people are now calling for deals. Say, oh, yeah, you didn't want to include Ingram. What else are you going to give us? And you don't want him fielding any more calls.
Okay. And so they decided to go with the change in direction. I mean, what do you think? Just like on a gut feeling, how do you feel Magic's going to do there?
Who knows what he's going to do?
It gives you a face in the room.
It gives you a marketing cheerleader to try to recruit people. But as far as a scout and a player personnel evaluator, I don't see him really, you know, providing much at the moment.
Okay, and let's talk about those actual deals. Like, what does that do for the Lakers? Getting Brewer and Ennis and basically dumping Calderon, who's getting a buyout, along with Huertas, and the other one that we talked about is Lou Williams being gone. Like, how?
Well, you get a 25-game flyer on Tyler Ennis, who's already been abandoned by three teams already.
Yeah. Did you hear that story that Lonzo Ball's dad, he corrected himself later, but he said that Lonzo only wants to play for the Lakers.
And by Lonzo, he meant he only wants Lonzo to play for the Lakers. This is what. Why are we interviewing his dad again?
Because he's allowed now.
You know, that's the same thing of when Archie Manning was like, "Oh, my son doesn't want to go to San Diego." Like, well, why are you? You know, we don't need to hear from parents or.
Yeah, overbearing star athletes' dads it can be incredibly.
Like, you know, worry. Who cares where he goes? You're going to still be at UCLA when his brother comes in next year.
Yeah, the one that scored the 90-something points because he cherry-picked the whole game. You know, I will say this. I was watching him play Arizona. I mean, he's a stud. Like, I think he actually will be a good NBA player. You know, it gives me hope that if you keep the top three pick, you probably shouldn't trade it.
And that's what basically happened is how many times have you seen, you know, a team who's in last place dangle their number one pick for really anybody? And, you know, you got to see where your pick lands to find the value for it. Right now, you're guaranteed a top four pick. So, you know, it's what, Jonathan Isaac?
But don't they have to stay in the top three to keep the pick or Philly gets it? Is that correct?
Oh, I thought we were referring to Boston. As for the Lakers, yes, they need to stay in the bottom three. And I don't really think that pick was on the table as so much as...
Well, you know, Boston's a good... That's a good transition because one of the biggest stories was the fact that your Boston Celtics did nothing. You know, it really... The quote that Andrea Wojciechowski put in Twitter on the trade deadline was that they stood pat. You know, they just did not feel like they had a deal that they liked. You know, there were rumors forever and ever for the last two days about Jimmy Butler for a Brooklyn pick. You know, they don't even Adam. It's so bad that they don't even call them the top picks. They call them Brooklyn picks. That's how valuable they are. They know that Brooklyn's going to be so bad for the next 2 years that it's like a guaranteed top three pick. So it's like the Brooklyn pick. So like the whole economy behind it was, okay, how many Brooklyn picks would it take for Jimmy Butler along with maybe like Jay Crowder's good contract and maybe Kelly Olynyk and maybe Tyler Zeller's deal to kind of balance out the money? Paul George was the other superstar where there seemed to be some inklings that he might get moved, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, and then, you know, there had to be super godfather offers of, you know, you have to give us Jaylen Brown, Smart, Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, three of those four plus a Brooklyn pick. It's like, well, why are you gutting your team for a player?
The one thing that... go ahead.
Is it going to put you over Cleveland? Probably not. So you don't know what the value of the pick is yet. You do it at the draft. That's when the trade will happen. If they, you know, do you want Lonzo Ball or do you want Jimmy Butler? Well, you know, arguments can be made both sides. But to do it now, it just it doesn't make sense why they would. Of course, you know, fans are impatient and don't really understand things. Well, why couldn't we just get everybody? Why couldn't we get Butler and you know, why couldn't we become a super team?
Let's just make the players on hand interchangeable for a trade. Say, like, for example, Jimmy Butler and Paul George. I'll give them to you one by one. But I'll give you an opportunity to make a trade for Paul George, you know, if you run the Boston Celtics. And whatever players that Indiana wants, you give it to them. How many Brooklyn picks do you put in there?
You'd give them a Brooklyn pick, and you not have both. So many not other both. Picks. You have a Clippers pick. You have a Memphis pick. You have your own picks.
Okay.
You know, you could be like, okay, here's a Brooklyn pick, Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, and, you know, two first-rounders. You're not going to gut your team. And at the same time, Indiana's like, well, we don't want two players. The same thing for Jimmy Butler. Like, would you take, you know, let's say, would you take Marcus Smart and the Brooklyn pick?
You know, I'll probably...
And Jay Crowder? It's, you know, it's a fair deal, but if that's your cornerstone and an all-star player and a top 25 player, that seems an awful low ball for you.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I think those GMs, they want Danny Ainge to pick those Brooklyn picks. They want them to eat those picks because they don't know what that player is going to be. Now, I will, like I was saying, I think in 2017, I think you're betting good money you're going to get a really good player. But in 2018, there's a good chance I'd pick my backfire on. You know, I mean, and I will say this. I don't want to call it justification of a high pick, but I did notice I did enjoy the Boston-Toronto game and Serge Ibaka and also P.J. Tucker, who we'll talk about in a second. It was their first game with the Raptors, kind of new-look Raptors, I guess you could call it. A lot of chippiness. Isaiah Thomas almost got in a fight with Damari Carroll. Really intense game, but I noticed Jaylen Brown was getting a ton of minutes. I mean,
well, because... Avery Bradley is still out with an Achilles injury, so...
Yeah, but is this sort of the transitionary phase where it's like, okay, we got to start putting Jaylen Brown in these reps so that we can at least see what he's got, you know, for our playoff push?
Well, you gotta, you know, his minutes will drop when he returns because you can't play, you know, if you play Marcus Smart there, there's really no second unit at all. And, you know, what it comes down to is the Celtics have so many picks, they could have gotten... somebody better, and then you hear Ainge's excuse of, well, no, we have chemistry, so we can't get rid of James Young or Jordan Mickey or Demetrius Jackson because this team has chemistry. It's like, well, you still have no rebounding. And it showed when Toronto sort of just ran them over.
Yeah, or you could go with the Pelicans route of fuck chemistry, get a star, make it work.
Well, it's the Pelicans of, you know, our GM sucks, we need to fire him. Wait, somebody's going to give us an all-star for nothing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It gave Del. I mean, did you see the grin on Del Demps' face at that presser? It was as wide as the Pelicans' beak. He was like, "I just saved my job for another year," kind of face. You know,
pretty much.
I mean, now Alvin Gentry. I don't know that. I mean, Demps has already gone through a coach and fired him, so it would not surprise me if he went through Gentry if it doesn't work out. But I mean, that's just one. That's a discussion that we've already spoken about. Let's move on here with another team that you can say stood pat, but they did make one small move, the Atlanta Hawks. First off, were you surprised Paul Millsap was not moved?
No, if you're committed to keeping him, and that's going to be, you're going to build around him, you sort of, you know, there's no, given the way the market went, what could you possibly have gotten for him that, you know, wouldn't been Jimmy Butler price, you know, would you take a first for him? Well, no. And they're not tanking. They can't fall into the lottery.
And that's the thing too. Like they're in a position. They're six games over 500 right now. They're in a position where they felt like they were kind of going back into a reboot. But you already have Dwight Howard in the fold. You already have Dennis Schroeder in the fold. By the way, Dennis Schroeder was suspended for a game because I think he missed the flight after the All-Star break.
Did you hear that story? He forgot to put his visa in his passport.
Oh my God. I don't want to laugh, but it's an international game. There's tons of them. But anyways.
It happens, and it was stupid, but the same point. What does Atlanta prove by suspending him the one game, which exactly. They lost, and then the second game he came off the bench, and they lost again?
A terrible Magic team, yeah.
Is Malcolm Delaney as a starter going to prove anything as it?
No.
It's just...
But here's the thing. They were kind of it seemed like they were tracking after the Korver trade of, okay, let's blow this up. Let's put Dwight at the centerpiece and just with Schroeder as our main point guard. Let's see what we can do from here. Like, do a soft reboot. Kind of like we were talking about with Kupchak when Kobe re-signed in 05. Like, we still got a star. Let's just kind of, like, revolve it around him. But that's not really what they did. They decided that they felt that they had some value with Millsap. They were winning a bunch of games in a row after, like, a couple, like, a lull in the middle. So they felt like, okay, let's just make a go of this. And I think they were sort of keeping up with the Joneses of the fact that, you know, Boston is still a pretty strong team. The Raptors made a move. The Washington Wizards made a move where they got Bojan Bogdanovic and Chris McCullough, who's a second-year player, I believe, in exchange for Andrew Nicholson, Marcus Thornton, and the first-round pick that's lottery-protected. But for Atlanta, it felt like they were sort of keeping up with Washington, Toronto, and Boston. Like, we got to get a little bit better somehow. So they decided, let's just dump Tiago Splitter's shitty contract. We can put a bunch of complicated second-round picks together, and Philly is not looking to get better. They've already gone into their annual post-deadline tech mode where they're like, okay, it's time to stop being realistic of like trying to win and let's try to get as high of a high a draft pick as possible, which is the hinky approach, which is actually the smart approach, right?
Well, it was the Philly deal. It was everything just did not come up Philly's way at all because Philly, the second round pick they gave with Splitter. Philly doesn't get it's so highly protected, it's not going to roll over.
Yeah,
this was like, just so Philly could hit the floor, I think. Hit the salary floor.
The combination of the second round picks is a little complicated. Like, it's separate in years, but they're both protected, but they can be converted or something like that.
Yeah, and Philly already has so many trades and swaps in their thing. It's like, it was so impossible to try to figure out who gets what in that deal.
Yeah, basically it was, hey, do you want Ariza and Ilyasova for nothing? It's like, okay, we'll give you Tiago Splitter's expiring so that you can hit the salary floor. And Philly said, okay, let's do it. Not only that, they basically dumped Nerlens Noel.
Oh, this was the, you know, you had mentioned how much of a fleecing that Sacramento got. And I'm like, this one is even sort of worse if you break it down. Mm-hmm. Because you got Bogut. All right, you're going to cut him. We all knew that was going to happen wherever he went. Yeah. He was going to get bought out.
He's a quicker picker-upper.
Yeah, he's going to get bought out in Dallas, so there was no need for him. Justin Anderson, whom you liked and cooled off on him, is the same player as Nick Stauskas.
Yeah, well, but he can't shoot. He can't shoot, though.
And a first-round pick that is top 18 protected. They just said, oh, they got another first. But it's top, it's not even lottery protected, it's top 18. And if they don't get the top 18, it's going to be a second round pick.
Not only that, it's a second round pick in separate years, which is much harder to trade. Now, if you had 2 seconds in the same draft, yes, you could probably make an excuse to bundle them together and trade up with a team that's trying to get out of the first round because they don't want to take on more salary and blah, blah, blah. But when it's 2 separate years, it's harder to bundle them back together.
And the 2018 pick is highly protected, too. You gave up Justin Anderson and a second-round pick for Nerlens Noel. Like, how much did you... And then, you know, this is on top of the Okafor thing, where you publicly benched him because the trade was going to come until Denver was like, look, we'll just give you a first. Take Nurkic away.
Yeah.
So, you... And then, you know, Philly fans don't like Okafor. They know he can't play with Embiid and doesn't really provide anything.
Well, let me ask you this. Was there a little bit of politics in the maybe, and I don't know if Brian Colangelo was that cunning that he pulled Okafor out of those games because there was scuttlebutt that Okafor had been in talks with, you know, being traded to the Pelicans, to the Bulls, to the Pacers, and so they pulled him so that, you know, so not to risk injury for him, so that to not, like, lower his stock. But what happened was, while Okafor was sitting, Noel was getting more minutes. Noel was having his best games of his career, you know, especially on offense. And that was giving more blow for Noel so that people could watch him and say, well, I don't want Okafor if he's sitting on the bench. I want the guy who's playing your best ball. And that's how Noel got done.
It did nothing. If anything, if you pull them off the bench, you know, that's trying to drum up trade of, oh, we have something coming. You better get your last second picks in and beat this because we're ready to ship him out. And Noel, you don't drive up the value if that all you got was a top 18 protected first round pick and another wing player who I don't know where he's going to play behind, you know, Simmons and Saric and.
Well, Saric is getting a lot more minutes because the word's out now that Joel Embiid is going to sit four more games at least with a very slightly torn meniscus, even though he was caught on camera dancing at a concert, which he got basically like the finger wagged to from the GM for doing that because he was caught on camera. And yeah. The other one is Ben Simmons, who they've announced is not going to play at all, his broken foot that has had surgery, they had surgery on it, and it looks like it's not healing as well as they wanted it to, so he's not even going to play summer league. So basically, it's shutdown time for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, and this is just the dumpster fire that is Philly continuing for another, you know, round two.
But it's also, you know, a sneaky tank job so that you can get that pick to try to get a point guard, whether it be Fultz, whether it be Ball, whether it be one of those guys.
But there's a difference between a sneaky tank job. Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and then just a cancer killing. Your process was, let's start with Noel. Okay, he's gone. Okafor, nobody wants him. And then, okay, you have Embiid, who we sort of, you know, the worries of, oh, this guy's awesome. Yeah, in 20 minutes every other game. And now all of a sudden he's out probably for the year now because it'll be five games. And now let's just shut him down.
That is a good point about Noel being the first step because that was the very first trade that they made on their reboot or, you know, tank job, the Hinkie era. What would you call the Noel era in Philadelphia?
It's still going of just, I call it, it's just a series of dumpster fires.
Yeah, and Dallas needed everything New Orleans Noel represents. They needed size. They needed athleticism. They needed youth. He gives you all three of them.
Yeah, they needed a prospect, and now, you know, oh, we can match, you know, his deal anyways. We were probably going to, you know, near max him out anyways or give him a huge deal. So now let's just, you know, get in 25 games with Harrison Barnes so they could play together and get used to each other. And now you have some excitement in Dallas, and what does Philly have? They're back at, oh, we have Embiid. He's the future now because...
But he's sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. I mean, Saric gets a little bit more blow. I mean, it might help him out with his ROI standings or vote getting. But, I mean, we know Embiid's going to win Rookie of the Year. I mean, that's not even – I think Embiid could not play a game for the rest of the season and still win Rookie of the Year.
Oh, it's funny. You read some articles. It's like, well, now that Embiid's gone, Saric could easily be Rookie of the Year because this rookie class has been so awful and hardly even playing.
Yes,
it's what I can't even wonder who's going to be the second team rookie because it's just what do you play 20 minutes and you're automatically now in it because nobody's done it.
Let's try to guess it. Like the first team would be Embiid, Saric, Buddy Hield because he can get more minutes in Sacramento. By the way, let's just kind of throw this in there. How do you feel about that Sacramento team as it is constituted as we speak? You know, like Willie Cauley-Stein taking DeMarcus Cousins' minutes. Kostas Poufos is going to get a little bit more. Ben McLemore is going to get one more chance to show what he can do before he's an RFA. Like, what do you think you can get out of Sacramento right now?
Sacramento, it was just, I think you see it as one of those, you have to move on and you have to start somewhere. So, it's...
Derek Hollison's your best player in terms of PER.
Yeah, and he's – how long is he going to be there for? And the problem is with you have – they're just, you know, lottery tickets again. You have Scalabissiere. Okay, now he's going to get minutes. You have Malachi Richardson. Now he's going to get minutes. And, well, can any of these guys play? Well, we're not, you know, you have 2 years to figure it out because you got to build with something. They're going to have to give a max deal to some horrible player just to meet the salary floor because they're probably not even close anymore.
Oh, the Kings have to move money around so that they can get a big contract? No way. that's how the Philly deal happened. The horrible Philly deal where they gave up rights to swap for like 2 years.
Yeah, it's well now they have to give money to somebody because I don't know their salary cap information, but Tyreek's a free agent and I don't know how much Collison has left. The only thing is you could hope for is if Gay opts out, then okay, now you have no salary. So
yeah, now you got to get somebody, you know, you got to do what Philly did this past summer when they were like, okay, now we got to reach the salary floor because of the new CBA. And so they signed Gerald Henderson and Jared Bayless, whose Achilles exploded. You know, or so it was either his Achilles or his knee. He's been out for the entire season. So, like, but you needed those contracts in order to make it work, you know?
Yep. But to answer your question from before, it'll probably be Heald, Saric, Brogdon,
Chris.
Cousin Jamal.
Jamal Murray, though, he doesn't get – his minutes fluctuate big time. You know, and here's the problem. Nobody got moved in Denver either. Were you surprised that there was no Fareed being moved? There was no – who was the other one that we kept talking about?
Wilson Chandler.
That's a potential buyout guy right there. But nobody got moved out other than Nurkic. Was that a surprise?
It's just one of those, the market, you know, this was not the year for rentals. So anybody who has them, it's like, well, again, it does you no good if you have no intention of keeping these people.
Yeah.
So the, you know, who became the real buyers? The only real buyer was Cleveland. And, you know, they're doing it with Deron Williams and Derek Williams.
Yeah, we're going to have to make sure that we get the pronunciation right on Darren and Derek, even though I don't know how much contribution they're going to truly, truly have in the playoffs. But then again, you never know. It's always a surprise.
And, you know, yeah, the only real buyer was Houston of, okay, we need to clear cap. We need to get a player. We need to do something to try to,
they decided
be dangerous.
To spend. They decided to spend. Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, because now is not the time to. With, you know, you had, you know, Phil Jackson publicly trying to move Carmelo and try to get him out of there, which backfired on him. And everybody else is just like, well, wait till the off season. The off season, a lot of things are going to come down. The salary cap isn't as high as everybody thought. So all these deals you gave out last year aren't going to happen again. What is, you know, how is Golden State going to gut their team to keep this starting five with no bench now?
Yeah. And the Rockets didn't want to dip too much into the tax with the added-on salary with Lou Williams, so they decided to dump KJ McDaniels in a trade to Brooklyn. I actually like that for Brooklyn. You get a guy that is a wing. He can play defense. You can play him alongside Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Caris LeVert. And he has, like, zero impact on you making moves. So, but for Houston, I understand why, because you're adding all these pieces, so you have to dump kind of minimum salary so that you don't go too far into the tax. But I do like that for Brooklyn. I thought that was actually kind of a win-win.
It's a flyer. KJ McDaniels was part of the Sam Hinkie hype train of, well, there's no, our team completely sucks, so let's just put anybody out there. If somebody buys him, oh, that's great. We got a second-round pick for him. And then somehow his agent got a two- or three-year deal for him out of nowhere. And then he couldn't, you know, could get on the floor. So Brooklyn really loses nothing because they have a team option on him next year.
Well, the rare thing with KJ is that he signed a deal coming out of the second round where it was 1 year only. Like, it was one of those things where he bet on himself. But it made him an easily tradable player because you don't have to commit to him for the second year or pick up an option.
Yeah, but he parlayed it in, well, that was just Philly of, I don't want to stay here for 3 years
exactly,
on team options.
Exactly. I mean, for Philly, we'll see. I mean, I don't think they're in the rut that there used to be with Hinkie. That was the biggest snag with Sam Hinkie, is that no free agents even remotely considered going there because they just didn't respect him. And they didn't want to lose all the time. You know, it was only through the draft where you were forced to go to Philly that you were able to bring the players in. But now that those players are sort of coming to fruition, it like there's a little bit more pressure on Colangelo to bring in free agents that might actually fit. You know, that's the problem.
Or it's just the conspiracy theory of Colangelo's just blowing up this team even worse to make sure nobody tries this process again.
That's a good one. The last big trade that we'll have to break down here, it was, to me, this was the biggest swindling of them all. The Oklahoma City Thunder got Taj Gibson, who's in the last year of his contract, a good defensive big, along with Doug McDermott and a 2018 unprotected second-round pick, which is whatever. And they got traded to Oklahoma City. Chicago got Anthony Morrow, Joffrey LaVerne, and Russell Westbrook's dance partner Cameron Payne. This just sounds unfair, just reading it.
I don't say it sounds unfair. It just makes no sense for Chicago. Like, are you trying to blow up your team? I don't know why they would just give McDermott away.
Is it because Taj was like one of the last remnants of the Thibodeau era and they just wanted to dump him?
I don't He was a free agent, so I think it's one of those, well, we could get something for him. We have no intention of re-signing him. Philosophy, but, like, what are you doing? Okay, we got Cameron Payne. We're going to be high on him, who has come back very slow after his injury and still not good. But you have Carter Williams. You have Rondo. And not Jerian Grant. Jeremy.
No, it's Jeremy. We're talking about the Bulls, right?
Yeah, they got three point guards.
Jerian is the point guard. Jeremy is the big man.
Oh, yeah, okay, so they got three point guards on their team, and you're adding a fourth point guard. None of these guys, Carter Williams is the closest who can play the two.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't really play the two.
And he just got another knee injury, so.
So what are you doing trading for four point guards? Mm-hmm. And, like, are you blowing up your team? Are you, what is this, you know... Oklahoma City's their problem was their bench was awful, and then you have Roberson and Sabonis. Sabonis he's not a stretch four. Playing him there that's just hurting him.
Yeah, he's a bruiser. I'll give him that. You know, he's not afraid to get down in the paint. I will say this: Roberson, Adams, Oladipo, and Taj together—that's a good defensive squad. If you decide to run with those five on the court or those four on the court.
Yeah, so it makes them better, and they really, you gave up your backup point guard who never, it only take just an injury to Westbrook for him to even, get major minutes.
And the other part of it, too, and this is very small, is that you gave up Morrow and Laverne, who weren't really making huge money. I think the amount of money that they swapped out along with Payne was, like, at the most, maybe, like, $8 million total that they swapped out. But what it is if they don't want Taj Gibson back, because he's on an expiring deal, you can keep some of that money to try to because this was the rumor on Twitter after the deal was done, that they can now have the cap space to re-sign Andre Roberson. Do you think that would be a realistic possibility?
That is a realistic possibility of if you plan on keep, which we mentioned, is there going to be money for him now? And, well, you didn't give up really much for him. You just you got a shooter, which your team desperately needed, because Roberson is that defensive guy, and you need McDermott to come into that second unit and start shooting.
Yes.
How is Alex Abiernis going to play? Because McDermott is sort of just a little bigger version of him.
That's your second team all rookie, Alex Abiernis. The thing with Abiernis is that I don't know how good he really is. They just needed a shooter. Like, they desperately needed someone to come off the bench and be a shooter, and Abrinas was the guy. Now McDermott's the guy. The other thing about McDermott is that in the post, he's actually pretty good, but they never posted him in Chicago. You know, he does have post moves because he played the four in college, but I wonder being in Oklahoma City will allow him to freelance.
It allows him more than he had in Chicago, because don't forget, Chicago really, they traded away picks to lower their salary, so they picked him. I think they gave away Nurkic and somebody else who's a...
Yeah, I think I remember listening to this one where the tracking of what they had to give up. Oh, they had to buy out Anthony Randolph's contract so that they could have the space to move up to get that pick, and they picked McDermott.
Yeah. So, and it was one of those, like, he didn't really fit in Chicago. The people liked him, but it was, he was behind so many people and never really got a crack, and it was just questionable for Chicago. That was the last big trade and probably the only real big trade on the big question mark.
Yeah, PJ Tucker going to Toronto was interesting because Phoenix gave up. They gave up Tucker, but they got basically nothing back.
They got 2 second round picks from Toronto, Sullinger, but they cut him already, and they also. They also got Mike Scott from Atlanta for a pick that's not going to be conveyed, so they just gave cash for that. Phoenix is also, let's just get second round picks, and maybe a Euro player will become the next superstar, the next Gasol.
Trying to sneak into that top three, possibly?
With second round picks?
No, in the lottery.
Oh, they were already there. They're already terrible. You already started that tank job by starting Marquise Chris, the only player who looked more clueless than Chris this season, I think, is Noah Vonleh.
Yeah, Vonleh, especially now that you got Plumlee out of there, so now you need another big to go with Nurkic if Nurkic isn't...
It's just, right. You know, you start a rookie who has no clue what to do and is raw to begin with just because, we got nothing really. And having, you know, no plan, they're content to just be bad.
Were you surprised Brandon Knight's deal did not get moved? Because that was another rumor.
I think that'll be an offseason. I think offseason we're going to have a lot of... It'll probably be like a three-way deal. Brandon Knight for... Rubio for Reggie Jackson for somebody else.
So wrapping up here with the trade deadline stuff, let's just kind of talk about like winners, losers, incompletes. I would consider Toronto a winner. You know, you got to win now. Just do it. Just get it out of the way. You got better with PJ Tucker, who can actually start at the four sometime, at the three spot sometimes if you're in a pinch. And then Serge Ibaka is just what the doctor ordered for them. They desperately needed a good defensive big. They got it. They didn't really have to give up a whole ton to do it, just Terrence Ross and some picks.
Even so, this was the thing we were saying. They were missing a four, and you know, with the injury to Love, I think this was their chance. Like, we might be able to sneak into the finals now if we, you know, get a little... Because that was a piece they needed. They tried desperately last year to do something, so we knew they were, and they succeeded on all counts, and okay, they gave up all their picks, so, yeah, who cares? This is our team. You know, if they lose Ibaka next year, it might be a, ooh, that, you know, it'll start hurting again, because now they're going to have a big hole. Other big losers, yes, Toronto's the winner.
Yeah.
Other winners,
I say Washington, because they got Bogdanovich and they got out of Nicholson's contract. Because Nicholson's contract wasn't a bad one, it was the years. Like
Yeah, 4 years, 20. It's not, you know, that's the we need to get the salary floor. But yeah, they got Bogdanovich, who's gonna, you know, be that shooter on the second unit. That was a very, very good deal for them.
I mean,
so,
doesn't Bogdanovich average like 16 points a game?
Yeah, he is a shooter. He's a
spark plug. That's how he was when he first got to Brooklyn, when Pierce and Garnett were still there. He was the guy that would come off the bench and just pop off threes. You know, that's what he does. And that's exactly what Washington needed.
Yep. So, okay, we can agree they're winners. Mixed bag for New Orleans because everybody was super happy for them. But
it's a win, .. for now. That's how I'll put it.
Okay, and you haven't had that this term of win. You're confused. Like, we're not used to that.
Yeah. I'm
so
like,
okay,
this is a good deal. I don't know what to say.
Oh, Dallas, huge winner.
Are you that high on Noel, or is it something else?
The fact you gave up really nothing for him,
mm-hmm.
for a team that we've every week we're like Dallas has nobody. They've piecemealed their team for 5 years with veterans. They have no prospects, no youth, no future. Their picks, they've all been getting rid of them every year. Like, remember 2013, they traded down like three or four times to get Shane Larkin because they didn't want to pay anybody, and they just cut him like after a year.
Yeah. The other winner I would say is Houston, just because they're doubling down to win, and these were the right moves to make if you want to win right now. You know, now down the road, giving up those picks, you know, not having any cap space for next summer, that might come back to hurt you. But for now, I'd say good deal. Oklahoma City did a good job. Biggest losers, I think you and I both agreed Chicago was one.
I would say the biggest losers are the teams that didn't do the deals and sort of expose themselves. Number one, Portland.
Okay.
They are going to have a super huge contract. They're in the luxury tax this year.
They were basically on the cap wise. They were basically on the life raft, begging for someone on the ship to throw the rope.
With
down
Evan
and
Turner's
no
injury,
scared.
they did yeah. nothing. They did nothing to shed any salary because mm-hmm. you traded that rookie deal for another rookie deal. So you just swap that and just you're to build the second most expensive team in the league to be ninth place right now. That's sort of you need
terrible
to do something.
Sign. Yeah.
And another team that we mentioned, well, we mentioned it, but I don't think anybody really took time to look at it, was Indiana and just how bad that team is and how that team really doesn't have a future.
Well, they didn't move Monte. They didn't get the big blockbuster Paul George deal where they could have gotten various draft picks because I guess Larry Bird just did not feel confident enough in giving up Paul George now. Even though
that's just the...
here's the thing. He is an all-star. He's a terrific player. But if you look at his numbers, they have slowly dwindled for Paul George.
I would say that's more of system than anything else, because you try to move him to a four and he couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't all about that.
Yeah. So Indiana's kind of in a bad place in terms of just the makeup of their roster. But here's the thing: they're still a playoff team. They're still sixth in the East. So it's not like a totally lost effort. You know, you can still make something out of it.
No, but that's all they're going to be. This is like the old Milwaukee team of, okay, you're now the 6th, 7th, 8th seed for the next 5 years. And yeah, it was one of those, the media sort of drove up the price. Oh, they you know, there's a split, George and the team. Then it's just, well, let's look at Indiana. Who do they have? You got Miles Turner, Paul George, nothing around. Jeff Teague, you made that deal to make him better. It didn't really do any difference.
Yeah.
Thaddeus Young, yeah, he's good, but you're not going to get over the better teams. So it's like, well, how do you improve this team? Well, you really can't.
Yeah. And right down the middle, I would say for sure the Lakers, because they got rid of Kupchak and Jim Buss, who were a cancer to that team. But you had some pretty bad deals in this trade deadline. Like, I don't think any of those deals for them are going to work out. You know, unless
it's too early to tell for them. Other big losers, dumpster fires in Orlando. It's just everybody's now. It's the biggest loser is the biggest winner is just mediocre players who are 25, 26 now, because you're going to have, you know, I mentioned before, a lot of teams need to get to this salary floor. So you're going to see a lot of crazy deals for players who don't deserve it now.
Okay. And now let's talk about sort of I coined it, the quicker picker upper. Guys that get waived that you can see kind of picking up. We are in New Orleans with Jared Jack, who's finally coming back from when his knee exploded back in Portland like over a year ago. Darren Williams, we already talked about in Cleveland. There's already word out that Jose Calderon is going to go to the Warriors. Do you see any of these other ones where you might see a quick buyout and then somebody, one of these playoff teams, tries to make a run at them?
No, the only question mark is just where Bogut's going to go, because he hasn't really said right now.
Yeah, no, nobody really knows yet. That's a good point.
And that's, you know, everything else is just really a sort of garbage, like Larry Sanders, or, you know, you don't see any real veterans providing anything.
What's the word?
It's not going to be a shock, like, oh, we need to, you know, Terrence Jones, is he going to, you know, be that difference maker?
Mm-hmm. What's the word on Tiago Splitter? Is he medically not going to be able to get cleared?
No, he's already on Philly, and he already made the box score of sore thigh or something.
That could be a buyout, though, potentially, if you need another day.
But what is he going to do anything for you? If he's injured, he's not going to be back, and there's nothing you can't get from... I don't know who the players are coming back from China, but...
Mm-hmm. Jimmer Fredette is one. I mean, you can...
Well, no, he's still in the playoffs. They're going to be in the finals, probably. But
how far does the Chinese playoffs go to? They go to May?
The season ended... I want to say February 16th or 20th. It ended like a week or so ago. And then now they're in the playoffs, top eight teams. It's best of seven. I know the finals is best of seven. I don't know whether they do best of five.
I think the deadline for your final playoff roster, I believe, is like April 18th. Like right before the playoffs begin. And then from there on, all you can do is either deactivate a player that's already on your roster for the following round, but you can't add players. You know, you have to.
Yeah, there is a deadline, and most players are just, but you know, there's not like the players on the buyout market, they're not really there this year, because again, who are teams going to add that'll make that difference? There's really nobody out there, so I think teams are like, well, what's the point of buying him out? You know, he's not gonna go to a playoff contender. It would save us, you know, what, 50 grand?
Well, I mean, like, I don't think Darren's going to be itching for money either, you know. I'm trying to think of some guys, and maybe Nick Young? Maybe they just decide, you know what, we're done with Nick Young, you know?
No, but he still has another year on his deal, so that's stretching.
You're right, he's got another year. I'm trying to think of some of the guys who are close to their expiries who have player options that they just want to get rid of. And I'm like you are, I'm just sort of drawing a blank. I'm not really... Some of those are kind of unpredictable, too. And then some of them, they come out of the doldrums, like Andre Miller did with the Spurs. You know, it's just like, And then obviously there's your D-League call-ups. You know, we already saw one success story, Yogi Ferrell in Dallas, which is another reason why Darren Williams went to the Cats. But, I mean, it's hard to see. Like, maybe Quinn Cook. Like, we heard rumors about him.
Yeah, Quinn Cook is the next one. Ben Bentel got signed by somebody.
Not Boston, though, because they already released him, right?
No, they don't have his rights. He's...
Exactly.
Maybe he went to Dallas, or I don't know. He went somewhere. Briante Weber's, he's not going to get picked up now. They pick up Calderon, so
yeah, this he'll is when the 10 days start to fire up really, really fast.
Yeah, and those are players are just okay. They're decent, but you know what are we going to get from them?
Okay, where's the urgency here? Like, just give me two or three teams where urgency with the month of March coming up is really going to ramp up and kick in. I mean, obviously, all these teams are pushing to make the playoffs. Pushing to like get some kind of momentum or traction, but give me like two or three where you're really keeping an eye on them and say, let's see what they can really do. Like, is
the urgency is really just in New Orleans? That's the only one.
Well, Dallas possibly trying to make
it to make work. The playoffs.
Well, just to do anything, just to be relevant for the remainder of the season.
I don't think so, because like I said, everything's sort of set. And what do you want to get into the playoffs to be an 8 seed to be blown out by Golden State?
Mm-hmm.
I think just a lot of these like mediocre teams are just sort of accepting. There's obviously urgency in Portland. Like as for the East teams, like Detroit, there's urgency, but they're not panicking. They're just like, well, we'll just keep doing our thing.
Chicago offensively after the All-Star break has looked much much better. I can't really put my finger on it, but they're playing a lot better offensively. So maybe that's something to keep an eye on.
Well, they did have a week off, so
yeah, maybe Wade just needed the rest on his bones.
Well, we will find out. We have another few weeks to get into it, and then obviously we'll have our 8-hour NCAA team as usual, and then we don't hear from you for another. You lock yourself in the cave, and
I think I'll be able to swing a show or two. You know, in between, as long as we can try to figure out these goddamn contraptions that we have that record these beautiful voices that these future episodes, if we can figure that out, I think we'll be okay. Just very, very quick, Academy Awards, they will be over by the time people listen to this episode. Did you watch any of the Academy Award nominated films, any of them?
No, and I think I could go back many years and say I still haven't. I have a streak going.
Do you think the prestige of it is sort of worn off on you, or you just don't care about
I just don't care. I don't, you know, we could talk a long time about, oh, well, how come movies that people actually do see aren't nominated, and how come, well, this movie was shown in front of five people, but the five, you know, the 80-year-old critics loved it, and, like, La La Land, it's just, I'm sick of hearing all my, like, you know, comedy podcasts, ooh, I love it, I love acting, and that's what LA is about, coming here to act, and you have good weather, and it's just like, well, I don't
The director
care.
Of La La Land is Damien Chazelle. He did a movie called Whiplash that I absolutely love. J.K. Simmons won an Oscar for that one, and Miles Teller was in it, too. You've seen Whiplash before?
Negative.
Very good movie. I recommend that one for sure. But yeah, it's also weird because the studio system has kind of gotten broken up with, like, the different studios that finance these films, like Manchester by the Sea, which is an incredibly depressing film from Kenneth Lonergan. He did movies like You Can Count on Me and Margaret. That was financed by Amazon Studios, so obviously they have a deal with Amazon Prime, you know. I remember that movie that Idris Elba did, Beast of No Nation, was like was immediately available on Netflix, you know, and while he was trying to get a nomination for Best Actor. OJ Made in America, which was on ESPN, is up for Best Documentary Feature, you know, and rightfully so. It's a tremendous, tremendous documentary, you know. So it's kind of interesting how, just like with the Emmys, with Transparent on Amazon and all these other Netflix shows that have gotten nominated for different awards and won them, like, things have kind of gotten more interesting on the independent scene, where you can get financed by a total out-of-nowhere studio or a streaming service and still get enough traction to win if you get enough momentum and if you have the right people on your side.
Well, this year was just a lucky year because there are a lot of films that people seem to like,
mm-hmm.
and that got nominated, as opposed to many years where it's just like, well, everything sucks, and, you know, well, we have to put nine films on the top list, and it's like, no, we don't need it. And this, you know, this year is because, again, just the glut of, well, we have all these superhero movies, and that people are sort of growing tired of.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you there. Well, the other thing that happened is that Warner Brothers, you know, the DC slate just did not, it didn't hit the spot. You know, Batman, Superman didn't do anything for people. It wasn't very well received. Suicide Squad, would it be fair to call it a disappointment?
No, because everybody, it made a ton of money, and those who liked it, liked it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember all some of the Oscar nominations here for some of these films. Like, I remember one was Arrival. Arrival, I really enjoyed. It's one of the only ones I actually watched.
Man, yeah, and that's the, you know, I'm not, it doesn't, I used to watch them, mm-hmm. like, you know, let's say 5 years ago, I was like, oh, let me do it, but now it's just, who, you know.
Yeah, Best Picture, La La Land, Arrival, a movie
It'll be La La Land is probably going to sweep everything because, you know, the Oscars are, what are they really? It's just a tribute to themselves, and what's better than a movie about yourself, then you can reward the movie about yourself that you made about yourself. And
I'll give you kind of like the main showdowns for those acting ones. Denzel Washington for Fences, which is a movie about a kind of like a black man in his childhood, and Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea. Those are the main ones for the best acting ones.
I don't. I'm.
Yeah, you're not feeling that one, huh? I don't even know with best actress. I mean, I guess Emma Stone for La La Land. I don't know.
Like I said, La La Land's probably gonna win everything. So
yeah, it's we're spinning our wheels a little bit with this one. You know, maybe Moonlight. Moonlight's got a lot of got a lot of momentum going in.
And that's where you come to a basketball podcast on a wrestling site on the pop subdivision to hear about movies.
Well, that's the thing. There's just no movies that really grabbed anybody's attention. Like, I see them on my on-demand thing, and I'm like, nah, I don't want to watch that. You know, I'd rather watch Sausage Party on Netflix.
And that's the problem, is there's so much on Netflix, it's just, you know, you just get that there's too many things out there, and like, you know, you mentioned with the Academy Award, like, oh, everybody was, oh, we love, you know, the Orange is the New Black, oh, it's Stranger Things, it's the best show ever. Then 2 weeks later, okay, we've streamed everything, we binged it all in 3 days.
Yeah.
What's the next thing?
Give me your show that you've got in your back burner that you're definitely going to catch up with once the bun's out of the oven.
Nothing right now. I'm in between everything. There's just nothing going on. I'm not playing any video games. I'm not just spinning the wheels for the winter.
Yeah, mine is The Young Pope with Jude Law on HBO. I heard great things, but I have not seen an episode.
All right. Good
it.
Enough.
We got to wrap this up. Okay, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reish from my remote undisclosed location. Take care, guys.